I don't know if you have the pages that I asked you to print out. Page number 5. If you have page number 5 in front of you, we have a fascinating sugya. We started to talk about Geirus, and what we need to do is talk about the status of Rus and what halachas we derive from Rus. But first, I want to call your attention to one particular sugya in Geirus, which is very fascinating. And that's the sugya in Ksubas on Daf Yural from an Aleph called Ger Katan. And the Gemara says, Amar Avhuna, Ger Katan matbilin oso al das bezdin. Rashi explains that we're talking about a non-Jew. We'll take the case of a young boy. It doesn't matter if it's a boy or girl, but a young boy. And Bezdin is going to be Megayer, this young boy. Rashi says that even though Rav Huna only mentions Tvila, but Ein Lecha Ger below Milo Tvila. So by implication, both elements in the process of Geirus are going to take place here under the supervision of Bezdin. The child will be subjected to Mila and to Tvila. And Rashi says, Al das Bezdin, Shlosha Yu Bitfilaso. There'll be the presence of 3 members of the Bezdin present at his Geirus, Kidin Kol Tvilas Ger. When a Ger is Misgayer, there has to be a Bezdin that's present. Trichim Gimel. We need 3, that's the minimum number of a Bezdin. Now, the obvious question that we have to ask is, why would Bezdin even bother getting involved in such a process? So Rashi, 4 lines down from the top, the last of the skinny lines, Rashi says, Im ein lo av, ve'imo heviyasol is gayer. Which sounds like Rashi is addressing this question, why would Bezdin get involved in this process of Geirus? Because the mother of this child brings the child to Bezdin for Geirus. Obviously, we have to understand why Rashi says that we need the mother. Why the mother, not the father? Maybe if the father brings the child for Geirus, the father could be Megayer the child under all circumstances. Maybe if the mother brings the child, there might be various conditions that have to be met before Bezdin will get involved. It's not automatic. I don't know. There's a big question mark here about how and why Bezdin get involved in this process. Strangely enough, Rashi says, in order to give us a concrete expression of the relevancy of this Geirus, Mago B'yayin Kosher, that when the child touches wine, since he has undergone Geirus, he does not aser the wine under the law of Maga Akum B'yayin. Now, I don't know why Rashi felt compelled to stretch his arm out to this very strange nafkamina. I can think of a myriad of nafkaminas. If the child is Jewish, then we'll give him a bar mitzvah. He's going to be chayiv in tarik mitzvahs. He'll be part of a minyan. When he gets old enough, he can marry a Jewish girl. I mean, there are tons of nafkaminas. So we'll come back to this Rashi a little bit later. But let's understand, how does this Geirus work? So the Gemara says, Maika Mashmalon, what is Rav Huna telling us? Dizchusulo, v'zachin li'anam shalo b'fanav. Rav Huna activates the principle of zachin. Does that mean that, you know, anytime Bezdin sees a non-Jewish boy or girl, they should apply Zach Leon Shalom Fun and be Megayer then, throw him into the mikvah? Only in this case, Rashi says, where the mother brought the child for Gerus. So the Gemara says, is that the Chiddush of Rav Huna, that Zachin the other Shalom Befanav? We have a Mishnah that says Zachin the other Shalom Befanav. I don't need Rav Huna to Ibachazu in a Mishnah. Mal de Tema Ovid Kocham Befkeri Nichole, Dokamel and Eved Vadai Befkeri Nichole, Kamashma the Hani Mili God all the time, Tamadi Surava Kotin Schusulo. The Chiddush of Rav Huna is not the principle of Zachin the Yom Shal Befanav, but rather that this is called a Schus. Because as a general rule, we would say it's not such a great deal. Because Ovid Kocham Befkeri Nichole, he'd rather not have 613 mitzvahs, halavai should be mekayim 7 mitzvahs. But that only applies, says Rav Huna, in the case of a gadol. But if he's a katan, he hasn't yet experienced the pleasures of befkeira, and it's not nichale, and therefore zachin liolam shalom b'fanav will apply.
I have a question.
Yeah.
According to Rashi, so the mother brings him to the basin, right?
Yes.
So that means the mother's not Jewish? If she were Jewish, it wouldn't be required Gerus at all.
Well, that depends. Even if I assume the mother was Jewish, when did she undergo her Gerus? Was it before she gave birth or after she gave birth? Remember, we had a long discussion about this. We suggested that if she gave, if let's say it was Horaso Shalobik Dusha, in other words, she was married to a non-Jew, she wasn't Jewish, and then she becomes a Gerus before the birth.
Right.
Then the child does not need tefilas gerus because the tefilas ha'ei mahani l'yelet. But the child does need some sort of gerus. Let's call it mila l'shem gerus. And even though the child needs mila anyway, but the mila now serves a double function. It's both mitzvahs mila and mitzvahs gerus. But let's assume that Rashi's talking about a case where she gave birth to a child and then she underwent gerus, which means that her gerus has no bearing, no relevance to the child himself or herself, and therefore the mother would have to bring the child to Beis Din for gerus. But David, I certainly think that your point is well taken. Why would a woman bring a child for gerus if she's not Jewish? The answer is that she herself underwent gerus. And now she wants to bring her children along. They should also be part of the, you know, the package and enjoy the benefits of being a Jew. And Beis Din could be Megayer the child because of Zachin the Olam Befanav. The child has not yet tasted the enjoyment of Befkeira Nichole. So it's a real schus. Tosus raises a different problem. I was hoping that you would anticipate Tosus Kasha. The halach of Zachin Liodim Shalom B'Fanav is based on Shlichus.
Shlichus, right.
And there's no Shlichus to an Akum. It's very interesting that the parasha of Shlichus Shalom B'Fanav only applies to Yisrael. And not only that, Shlucho Shaladam doesn't apply to a katan. I mean, this child has two strikes against him. As far as the law of Shlichus is concerned, number one, he can't have a Shlich because he's a katan. Number two, he can't have a Shlich because he's an Akum. So based on these questions, Tosus comes to a very radical conclusion. You see how hard-pressed he was. And he says, Nira L'Ri, Ri says that this Gerus is only Durabanon. Hachanami Zachin lo midrabanan. The application of Zach Liyadim in this particular case to a katan and a guy is only on a Durabanon level. And the Rabbanon instituted this institution of Gerus for a katan, and it's all rabbinic. Tosus asks V.M. Kane, Hechi Havishari Hager. Sharina Le Bibas Yisrael, how can we allow this ger to marry a Jewish girl if on a Daraisa level he's not Jewish? And not only that, Kiddusha of Kiddushin, we recognize his Kiddushin as marriage, Habinat Torah, Ove Kochavimu. And here Tosis comes up with the famous Sugya Yivamis of Yesh Koch V'Yad Chachavim, Lakar Dover Minat Torah. There are 2 days in the Gemara where that applies even B'Kum V'Aseh, and our sugya here reflects the sugya of B'Kum V'Aseh. Now, I just want to suggest the following. That I begin, I'm not like ready to, let's say, swing around third base and come to home plate, but I'm beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel as to why Rashi, when he finds an afkamina to this Geirus, he says that if he touches wine, he doesn't ask for the wine. Very strange. The whole din of Maga B'yayin is only midrabana. And maybe what Rashi wants to say, like Tosis, that Zachon the Elder in front of on a Daraisa level could not possibly apply to this cotton, he's a guy. But rather, this whole institution is only Durabanan, and the Nafkamina is going to be a Din Durabanan. Durabanan created the Isur of Maga Akum B'yayin, and Durabanan said in the case of a Ger Kunshit, Bilo Saldas Bez, that it's Mutter. Einachinami, what happens when this cotton wants to marry a Jewish girl? Then we have a serious problem. In which Tosis says we can only allow him to marry a religious, a Jewish girl, if we maintain that shita that yesh koch v'yad chachamim lakar dov min ator b'kuvase. Rashi doesn't want to get into that old plugza. In fact, the maskonis asugi in all the poskim is yesh koch v'yad chachamim lakar dov min ator b'shei v'altase, but not b'kuvase.
There's also machlokes between the Tosfos and Rosh hold is mitam shlichus, and I forget who else is mitam yad. It's
correct. It could be that in the case of a cotton, for sure the cotton has no yad. Tosfos was analyzing the sugya from the perspective of zechiyah mitam shlichus,
right,
because he thought maybe, you know, we could begin to have a havamina that a cotton could, under certain circumstances, have a shliach if it's a zchusulo. But as far as the yad is concerned, which means that we're not operating in shlichus, that's impossible.
Well, the time of shlichus, there is already a precedent by the chalukas aretz, because given to Mitzrayim or Ketanim also, some of them.
Correct, and many Rishonim say that even though there's no shlichus to a cotton, nevertheless there's zchia to a cotton.
Right, but it's not shlichus though.
And even if it's mitam shlichus, but it's a unique kind of shlichus. It's a shlichus which would apply for a cotton. Again, if we had time for that, you know, we could say a lot of love this, but I just want to get to the punchline of the sugya, which is on the bottom of the page, and that's Rav Yosef. Oh, Rav Yosef, higdilu yecholim limchas. That the cotton has the right to make a macha and declare, as Rashi has it, efshi lios ger. I'm not interested. This becomes a real serious shaila with regard to adoption. As you and I know, you probably know people, and I certainly do, that adopt a non-Jewish child of a young age. What happens when the child reaches bar mitzvah, bas mitzvah, yicholim limchos? Imagine the case of an Orthodox couple that adopts a non-Jewish child, takes the child to Bezin for Gerus, and invests every ounce of energy that you could imagine in raising this child as a Yiddish child, sends the child to the best schools, pays all the bills, loves the child like their own. The child, for all intents and purposes, is a member of the Jewish community. Then, boom, the child reaches bar mitzvah and throws it off. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in which he claims that what the Gemara means is that we assume, until we know otherwise, that if the child, when he reaches bar mitzvah, continues to observe the mitzvah HaTorah, that he's accepting upon himself Yadus, and he's not interested in being mocha. We don't have to go out of our way to bring this Ger Katan into a Bezdin and offer him two opportunities, two choices. Maybe he'll take the old alternative of rejecting Judaism. That's not necessary.
So, I know something that happened to somebody I know, right?
Yes.
Went to a Bezdin. I think, I don't know what the formal Bezdin where they did, but they, at Bas Mitzvah, they asked her, "Are you remaining Jewish?" And she said, "Yeah." She said, "Yeah."
So that's interesting, because I'd love you to research that for me, if you can tell me where and when it happened, because I was always wondering about that. I know of a family member that adopted not one but two non-Jewish children in different periods of time, and they never actually, to best of my knowledge, brought the children in front of a bezin to formally accept Yiddishkeit. And that's why I think they relied on the Tshuva Rav Moshe, that it's not necessary to bring them into Beis Din, but just simply if they continue in the way that they've been taught and they we've been raised, that itself is a tacit acceptance of Yiddishkeit. And I never knew if there were any other poskim who expressed a different view than that of Rav Moshe. So I'm going to give you, David, that responsibility.
I can speak to a rabbi who knows the family. Speak to family themselves might be a little difficult, but
I want you to keep in mind one thing, and this is clear from the sugya, that it doesn't mean that for the rest of their lives, these children, you know, when they become adults, can be mocha and say, you know, at the age of 90, you know, I want to reject the whole Yiddishkeit. It all depends upon that moment of godless. And that you'll see on the bottom of your page, Kevan Shegdila Sha'a Achas V'lo Machsa Shuveni Yechol Limcha. So they have that choice to decide whether they want to remain Gerim or not, but only at that particular moment in time. Now here's the question I want to ask. What happens if the child reaches the age of godless, a 13-year-old boy, and he wants to chuck it, he wants to throw it all. Yochol limchos. Here's my question to you. How does that mechol work? Does it work mikan ulahaba, or does it work lamafreya? Are we saying that for the first, let's say, 13 years of his life, if you adopted this child at birth, the child was Jewish, now at the age of 13, the child reverts to being a non-Jew.
He's not chayv misa. I mean, like a goy who does the mitzvahs would be chayv misa. You're not going to say that he's chayv misa because he was doing the mitzvahs up till now, would you?
No, but what I'm asking is, what about all, you know, let's say, for example, he touched yayin. Again, let's use the example of Rashi. But what's the status of the yayin? Because now he did a mecha. So one side of me says that mikanu lahava, he became a guy, he has the right, you know, he reserves for himself the right to revert back to his goyus. But for the first 13 years of his life, he was a Jew. And whatever happened during those 13 years is valid as a Jew. My only problem with that, I mean, although again, that's one, in, you know, my knee-jerk response would go that direction, is that how could it be that someone who's Jewish all of a sudden becomes non-Jewish? There is no such process. We don't. The halacha doesn't recognize, you know, that's why I would much rather say, and I saw this in all the Sfarim, maybe we'll get to it today if time allows, that the mechal works lamafreya retroactively to make it as if he was never Jewish to begin with.
Can I ask you a question?
Wait, but just before you ask me questions, just one second. I want you to look for a moment at the Ritva, which you'll see printed on the bottom of your page. This is the Ritva in Ksubis. The Ritva in Ksubis asks the following question. We know that the process of Geirus has three parts to it. Mila, Tvila, and Kabbalas Mitzvos. A Ger has to be Mekabel, has to accept upon himself Mitzvos. Rashi says that although the Gemara only mentions Tvila, but there's no Tvila without Mila. So we've covered our basis. So we have now Mila and Tvila. The Ritva wants to ask another question. What about the third element of Geirus, namely Kabbalas Mitzvos? Vushtate. I mean, there's no mention here about the Ger cut of being Mekabel Mitzvos. I would enhance the question of the Ritva, even if the Ger Katan would say I'm a Kabbal Mitzvah, I hardly believe that such a Kabbalah would be halachically valid or recognized by the halacha, because a Katan can't be Makabal Mitzvah. A Katan is a Labar Das. And the Ritva says a mind-boggling chiddush here. He says that when the Gemara tells us in Yevamos, and this is derived from Naomi and Rus, because Naomi on her way back from Stamov to Eretz Canaan, according to Chazal, starts telling Rus, well, you want to join the Jewish people, well, you have to accept this mitzvah. You know, She first taught her the Isur Tchumin, that, you know, it was Shabbos, you can't go Chutz L'Tchum. So she said, B'yonesha Telchi Eilech, I'll be guided by you, and I'll accept the mitzvahs. And Amei, which means I'll drop Avodah Zorah, and Elokai Chalukai, and I accept the Tariq mitzvahs, the whole nine yards. And obviously, Kabbalas mitzvos is essential to Gerus, says the Ritva Hula Mitzvah Ve'eno Me'akev, in order to justify the institution of Ger Katan, who is totally bereft of the possibility of Kabbalas Ol Mitzvah. We're going to have to assume that Kabbalas Mitzvahs in Gerus is nothing more than a mitzvah. It's not Li'ikuv. Otherwise, the institution of Kabbalah, of Ger Katan, is completely nonsensical. Joe, what was it?
Well, first of all, with regards to saying something like that, then everything, all the machlokas which are having in Eretz Yisrael right now, is going to go to just be blown away, right? Correct?
Right.
That it's not like it.
I think those who say that maybe all this kind of quasi-gerus that's going on are relying on this ritva. Yeah. That's what Joe is pointing out. Yeah, go ahead.
Also, I was wondering, with regards to a Eved Kanani, if he would touch your yarn, what would be the situation? Is that considered, Eved Kanani, would he
puzzle the yarn?
As far as I know, yes. But I have to double check that.
I was going
to
go forward, it's because true. if you were going to free your Eved, right, then he becomes a Jew. But if he doesn't take
on the
mitzvahs at that time, yeah, but because if he doesn't take on the mitzvahs, he becomes a goy, right? Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right.
So then,
everything
that he'd been
right. So let's not go into Eved, you know, Eved Kanani. But just in the case of Ger, what do I do with this Ger Katan? Is he a Jew for those 13 years at the beginning of his life, or is he not a Jew? If we say he's a Jew, then I don't understand how Mecha could undermine his status as a Jew. If we say that Lamafreya, he's not a Jew, then what do we do with all the Yayin that he's been touching for the last 13 years? But perhaps what the Ritva means is a little bit different. What the Ritva means, again, and you'll have to tell me this is a stretch, but I'm trying to push it into the language of the Ritva, is that Gerus should be divided into two parts. One part is called the Maisa Gerus, and that's essential. And then there's something called the Tnai. Like, for example, I can give a woman Kiddushin and say, Harat Mekudeshesli Al Menas. And the Tnai is that your father will pay me 200 zuz, right? So there are two dimensions to that Kiddushin. There's the Maisa Kiddushin, which is Kesef Shtar Bia, and then there's the Tnai. Perhaps, again, I'm just thinking out loud, the Ritva smashes Gerus into two parts, two elements. There's one, the Maisa Gerus, which in this case is comprised of two parts, Mila and Tvila. And then there's a Tnai. And that condition must be met. What is that condition? Kabbalas Mitzvahs. Without Kabbalas Mitzvahs, there's no Gerus. But it's only a Tnai. Now you'll ask me, what's the difference? Who cares whether Kabbalas Mitzvahs is the Maisa Hamagayer or it's only a Tnai? The Nafka Mina is going to be a case where there is no possibility of fulfilling that Tnai. The Torah imposes this condition on Gerus when and only when there's a possibility of anticipating the fulfillment of that condition. If there is, for example, the Gemara says in Krisus that Karban is part of Gerus. No, so why do we have Gerus today? We can't bring a Karban, we don't have the Migdosh. The answer is that Karban is a Tnai in Gerus. But Medvarim Amurim, if there's a possibility of fulfilling the Tnai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could say, well, you know, the Gerus depends, it's contingent on X, but only if he affords me with the possibility of X. In the case of a Katan who doesn't have Kabbalas Ol Mitzvahs, the Tnai is completely waived. And this Rabosai might give us an insight into Rav Yosef Igdilu Yichol and Limchos. How does that Mecha work? How does the Gerus all of a sudden poof away? The answer is there was a Tanai in Gerus, which was postponed as long as the Katan was unable to fulfill that Tanai. He doesn't have Kabbalah's mitzvahs. Then we look at his Gerus through the Maisa Gerus of Milan Tefillah. Once he becomes a Gadol, now what's been lurking in the shadows can now come out frontal stage, the Tanai of Kabbalah's mitzvahs. Oh, you need Kabbalah's mitzvahs. So then he's got to continue as a Jew. If he decides to be Moche at that particular moment, he now undermines that principle of Kabbalah's mitzvahs, and the Gerus is not Gerus.
But it's not the Mafreya.
Then it wouldn't be necessarily Mafreya. The other way of saying it is that there's this new institution called Ger Katan, and the Gerus, it might be valid now, but only if the conditions will be fulfilled later on. So then after the condition is fulfilled, l'mafreya, he was a ger. If that condition is not fulfilled, then l'mafreya, he's not Jewish.
This is the Rav's idea?
I don't know if I heard it from someone or not.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, what do you want to say, David?
I want to say two things. So first of all, I want to argue with Joe, and I believe that the Kennedy is a forest gears as an Isha, so he can't be trafed up the line.
we'll send this to the there's a special council for the laws of Evid Kanani, you know, and we'll find out.
Okay, so, but second of all, I once heard of Shira on Shuas at night, having to do with Rus and the Nami and so on, right? So the question is, was Rus, how could Rus marry one of the Shoiftim and not be Jewish? Right, because she was Megayer until after her husband died.
Excellent. That's going to be page 6 of Yomar Mekomos.
So they right.
Go ahead.
I forget who says this, but they heard Shira a number of years ago. So they want to say this. You see, she was actually Megayer twice. Right. Once in the beginning to marry Lechlin and Kilyon, and the second time was to show that the first time wasn't for ulterior motives, to confirm it, in other words.
Okay. So I don't know who gave the Shir, but I can tell you where he got it from. And that's on page 6. Have you heard of the Moadim Uzmanim of Rav Sternbach?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I just saw him on Shabbos, actually. He's a neighbor of mine in Har Nof. And in his 5th volume, he has an entire section here on Megillas Rus. Now, in order to appreciate his amazing Chiddush here, you have to go back to the Bach in Hilchas Gerus. That's on the top of your page 6. Okay. The Bach wants to suggest the following. That the Gerus of a Katan is called Tolui V'Omed. What does that mean, Tolui V'Omed? We don't know exactly what the status of this Gerus is. We can rely on the assumption that this Katan will accept upon himself mitzvahs when he's a gadol. And indeed, if he continues to fulfill mitzvahs, he will become continue as a ger. When he's moche, when he makes a protest, then he undermines his kabbalas o mitzvahs. That's the essence of mecha here. And the Bach assumes that the gerus is now undermined retroactively. L'mafreya. And Rashi says that the Gerus of a Katan is L'inyan Mago B'yayin Kosher. Says the Bach, Aval Lola Sio Isha Yisraelis. The Gerus of a Ger Katan, Rashi was very careful by invoking the halacha of Mago B'yayin, would never ever be relevant to allow him to marry a Jewish girl. And why is that? Kevon shim yagdil v'yimche ye nochri l'mafreya. The word l'mafreya here in the Bach is very critical, because that sheds a light on the whole nature of Ger Katan. And why does the Bach assume that the Geirus of a Ger Katan is sort of hanging suspended in midair. We don't know exactly what the status is. It's very ambivalent. The answer is because since he could be Moche, and through that Mecha, he undermines the Geirus of Mafreya, therefore we really don't know whether he's a Ger or not. So the Rabbanan can tell you, okay, we'll look aside as far as Mago B'Yayin is concerned. We'll completely neutralize the Iser of Mago B'Yayin. But to allow him to marry a Jewish girl, now you're dealing with really heavy stuff. You're dealing with fire, and we don't play with fire. And therefore, Ein La Sio Isha Yisraelis. Now we look at Rav Sternbach. And he wants to shed a light on the entire story of Rus and whether Machlon was Megayer Rus before he married her. And although, I honestly, David, I don't want to get into this now, I don't think that Machlon had the status of a Shofet. I don't want to get involved in this, but the Gemara definitely says about Machlon that he was one of the Gedolei Ador.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
So again, I don't want to get into the technical question. Was he a shofet? Was he not a shofet? Maybe he was, but he certainly was a top-notch guy.
Exactly.
And he marries what seems to be a nochria, you know, a non-Jewish woman. Was he megayer her before he married her? And if he was megayer her, then he wasn't guilty of any sort of sin because she was already a gioris. So let's take a look at Rav Moshe Sternbach. And again, I don't know if we'll have time to go through the entire piece, but we'll try to go through the main points. What I'm going to do now, as by way of introduction to this whole piece here, which continues, by the way, on page 8, I would like to give a little bit of an overview of what he says. He bases himself on a Tosus in Nazir, on Daf Chav Gimel and Beis, which is the second source on page 6. And Tosus there says that Rus was a Ktana Kishin is Gaira. Oh, that really blows me away. I mean, this really sheds a whole new light. I mean, obviously, when Rus, years and years later, goes back with Naomi from the Stei Moav to Eretz Canaan, she was not a Ketana. Many, many years had passed. But she was a Ketana at the time of her Gerus. I mean, if I told you that, you would throw me out and say, Berzo, where do you come up saying such a thing? I mean, that's like from the Arabian, that's like crazy to say such a thing. But Tosus is on record. And Rav Sternbach is going to build castles in the sky based on this one half a line in Tosus in Nazir. So this is a big plug for those who learn Daf Yomi, but I don't know if you get a chance to look at Tosus.
Not always.
All right, we're way past Nazir by now, but not we. I shouldn't say we. Anyway.
Yeah, past.
Oh. Says Rav Sternbach, the Zohar claims that chas v'shalom, to even entertain the idea across your mind that Machlon and Kilion married non-Jewish women. And the only reason that Hashem cut down their lives prematurely, that punishment was for a different crime of a different ilk, that they left Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, right away.
And Joe is here from Canada, and he is supporting this position of the Zohar that we should not leave Eretz Yisrael. And I already have a dira for Joe in mind. I mean, I've been looking for a dira for myself, but I have plenty of spares to share with him at no loss to myself. Again, to buy any little dicky thing in this neighborhood, you have to have millions of shkolim. But we're going to make sure that that Harvick, what's it called over there? The company is doing well, and he can stay here in Eretz Yisrael. And you gentlemen will have to join me here because we don't want to be guilty of the crimes that were committed by Elimelech and his two sons, Machlon and Kilion, who are the Gedolei Yisrael, and they left Eretz Yisrael. Says the Zohar, Why did Hashem punish them so harshly? Because they checked out, they packed out of there, so when the going was going rough. But chas v'shalom, to assume or even entertain the possibility that they married non-Jewish women. They were the Gedolei Ador. Oh. But wait a second. You're going to tell me that there was Gerus at the time of the marriage between Machlon and Kilian and Arpah and Rus respectively? How can you say such a thing? All the laws of Gerus are derived from a conversation that took place between Naomi and Rus when they were about to enter into Eretz Yisrael long after the death of Machlon and Kilian. The Gerus obviously did not, it's not possible to assume that it took place at that time. In fact, why don't we express and reflect a little bit of loyalty to a pasuk in Tanakh? I mean, that's a fair request. And in Megillas Rus, Perek Aleph, pasuk Dalid, it says regarding Machlon and Kilian, Vayisu lahem noshim Moavios. They married Moavios, which, according to the Targum Unkelis, he says that that means the Avru al Gzeras member da Kodesh Baruch Hu v'schatnu bi'amim in Nuchroyim. They married non-Jewish women. So why not learn Pshuto Shel Mikra over here? Ah, says Rav Sternbach, there was Gerus and there was another Gerus. Like you said, David, before, there was Gerus of Matbilin Osal Das Bezdin. It means that Rus was a Ktana, as Tosfos in Nozer, at the time of her Gerus. And therefore, technically speaking, we're going to come back to the Bach that we started with in a minute. The Halacha would therefore permit Machlon to marry Rus. In fact, the Zohar says that the name Rus itself was given to her as a change, as a name change. We don't know her original Moaviyah name when she underwent Gerus. And the Ksuba, I'm just adding this, the Ksuba that was signed in the marriage between Machlon and her was called Rus. The name of the Ksuba was Rus, Reish Vav Sa'atav, because she was already a Gioris, but it was a Gioris al Das Bezdin. The question, therefore, is why do we derive the halachas of Gerus later down the line when Naomi had a discussion, a dialogue with Rus? The answer is because the first Gerus of Katan al Das Bezdin was lacking one major element. And what's that? Kabbalah's mitzvahs. The Kabbalah's mitzvahs who took place in that conversation with Rus.
So not
Mila and Tefillah. Again, there's no Mila by Gioris, but I'm saying the Tefillah took place at the time of Matbino Sol Das Bezdin, prior to the marriage to Machlon. The Kabbalah Sol Mitzvah had to take place later on when she became a Gedola. Now again, I'm not exactly sure when she became a Gedola, but let's assume that there was some sort of time gap between the death of Machlon and her becoming a Gedola. After all, Machlon married her when she was a Ktana. Let's say she was 3 years old, and 10 years later, she became a Gedola. Machlon dropped dead. He was killed by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, she's in a position of Igdilu Yecholim Limchos, which means that she now needs to fulfill the Tnai. As long as she was a Ktana, the Tnai was not imposed, was not a precondition for Hachalos Gerus. She had the status of a Yisraelis. Why? Because you cannot impose the Tanai of Kabbalah's mitzvahs on a Ketana. But now that she's a Gedola, she has the ability to go back to becoming a Goyita, because she has the ability to be Mochen, throw it off and cast it all off. Or alternatively, she can accept the mitzvahs and become a full-fledged Gioris. And that, Rabosai, this would answer another question. What does Naomi say to Rus and to Arpa?
Go back to your people.
Go back to your people. Go back to your gods. Now, imagine that there was, as Rav Shimon Bar Yochai insists, a Gerus way back when she married Machlon. She's a full-fledged Jewess. How could Naomi say to her, go back to your old ways? In fact, Naomi, if you ask me, would be guilty of the most hideous crime called a mesis. The Rambam says that a mesis is chayav skila. It's a capital crime to try to influence another Jew to worship idols and to go back to the nations of the world to be a Moaviah as she was originally. The answer is, Naomi was telling her, you now are at a crossroads. You have two alternatives. You have no problem going back to your old God. You want now to be Mekabel Torah Mitzvahs? I have news for you. It's not a bowl of cherries. It's not an easy thing to do. And I'll tell you the truth, in the light of Rav Sternbach, I'm tempted to think that when a ger cut and reaches bar mitzvah, maybe we should start from scratch, which, you know, in Shulchan Aruch it says that when a guy, we're talking about a guy gadol, comes to a bez, and he says he wants to be a guy, what do we try to do to him?
Dissuade him.
Talk him out of him, dissuade him. Maybe we should do that even to a ger cut, and maybe that's what Naomi was trying to do, I don't know. But be that as it may, Naomi somehow was convinced that although Orpah was not interested, you know, Naomi had succeeded, if you will, in getting Orpah to make that mecha, that Higdilichon Limchos, and go back to her old ways. In the case of Rus, Naomi was a total flop, a failure, and Rus was absolutely sincere, genuinely committed to a Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs, Amech Amech Elokai Elokai, and therefore she completes her gerus as a ger gadol, as a gerus gedola. Until now, her status was that of a ger katan. Now she has the status of a ger gadol. But wait, David, before you ask me any questions, I just want to make sure that what I told you is correct. Because again, there's a lot of small print here in the Moed Muzmanim. He says the following. He says, Kasher mesu machlam v'kilyon, V'ratzasa Naomi Loshuv Laretz Yisrael. Finally, she had it with Moab. She wants to go back to her land. Kvar Gadlu Rus V'Arpa. Rus and Arpa were that at that moment in time had become gedolos, and therefore Yitzrichos LeKabel Atzman Ol Mitzvus Ol Limchos B'Giuran. So Arpa Kima B'Atzma Higdilichol Limchos, and she threw it out, and therefore she goes back to her nation, to her people. And Lamafreya, we know that her gerus was never valid, according to the Bach. Lokein Rus. Rus, on the other hand, was Mekabel Olea Ol Mitzvahs Kedasu Kedin. And therefore, through that Kabbalas Ol Mitzvahs, which we derive from the dialogue, Mikan Dine Kabbalas Ol Mitzvahs Shel Gerim, is Huvar Adover Lamafreya, Shel Haisa Nesua Lamachlon Vagir Chal Lamafreya. It means that Lamafreya, we know now, after Rus accepts the mitzvahs, that in fact Machlon had married a Jewish girl. Says Rav Sternbach, I can answer another question. The Ramban, in his commentary in Parshas Vayeshev, says that the sod of Yibum, of the mitzvah of Yibum, is to be Makayim Zeral Shem Achiv Shemes. And in his presentation, he gives the example of Boaz, because the pasuk in Rus, in Perek Dalet of Rus, says the following. Just one second. It says over there that Boaz. Just one second. I just want to read the pasuk to you. Of course, when I need it, I can't find it. Anyway, you'll trust me on this one. The pasuk says, "Lahakim al shem hames." Oh, here it is on the top of page 5. Thanks, Joe. It says, "Vahakim zera liachiv." No. That's the wrong pasuk.
That's by Yehuda.
Where's the pasuk in Megillas Rus? You'll trust me on that for now, because we only have a few minutes left. No, it's not this pasuk. Okay. Sorry, Rabosai, don't lose any sleep on it. We'll find it. Here it is. Okay, Perek Dalet Pasuk Hey, which is on page 4. Okay, you don't have page 4 right now, but it says Lahakim Shem Ames. So the Rabban quotes that pasuk in Vayeshev to prove that Boaz was Mekayim the mitzvah of Yibum. He has a whole discussion why you don't need the brother at that time, blah, blah, blah. That's not for us now. But the question is, if we assume that Rus, when she married Machlon, was a Nachriah, then there is no yibum because the Torah doesn't even recognize the marriage. The teretz is, the Torah does recognize the marriage because since at the end of the day, when she becomes a gedola, Rus accepts upon herself kabbalas mitzvahs, is la freya. Her status as a Jewess was complete, was valid. She was a real, full-fledged Gioris, and therefore the marriage was Kedushin, and therefore the Zikas Yibum is generated when Machlan dies, and his relatives could be Makayim the Mitzvah of Yibum. Obviously, we're not totally out of the clear, because if you remember, the Targum says in Perek Aleph Mimigilis Rus, that the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the lives of Machlan and Kilion is because they married non-Jewish women. Well, wait a minute. If they were Megayer them Aldas Bezdin, then what's the claim? What's the tefiah? And I come back now to the Bach. The Bach says that the status of Gerus, of a Ger Kotten, is mitla toli bi'avir. It's somehow suspended in virtual reality. And we're going to allow this child to touch our wine because that's only a Drabonon. Avalola Sio Isha Yisraelis. We're not going to allow for marriage. Why, says the Bach? Because in Higdili Cholim Limchos. In other words, if I read Rav Sturmbach correctly, and we'll see it inside, Belinender, Machlon and Kilion made the following calculation. We know that we can raise these two girls as good Yiddish of Vaibloch, we'll send them to Beis Yankov of Moab. And they will certainly accept the Torah and the mitzvahs when they become old. In fact, in one out of the two cases, it was worth the gamble. And Machlon was proven true because Lamafreya, when Rus accepts mitzvahs, he, Machlon, married a Jewish woman. Unfortunately, Kilion didn't succeed because Arpa reached the lowest levels, Chazal say. And she was Mocha. Oh. Now you'll tell me, so why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu punish Machlon, Bishlei and Kilion? He took a risk, and the answer is we don't take risks. Avolola Sio Isha. You have no way of predicting what's going to happen at the end of the day. You're putting yourself into a situation where you might be married to a non-Jewish woman. Chas v'sholem, it's an Iser Chamur. You should not be married to such a woman. She may be Mocha later down the line. And the beauty of Rav Sternbach is that he quotes two other individuals in our ancient history who did the same thing and they made a big mistake. One was Shimshon HaGibor and the other was Shlomo HaMelech. Both of them took women who, if you read the Poshep Shat in the Tanakh, they took Nachrios, non-Jewish women as wives, Chas v'Sholom. And again, if we have time, we'll go through all the sources. They were Megayer, these women. But they were Megayer them as Ktanos.
That's what he says, that are they also women?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll go through again. Rabosai, you have to bear with me. There's such a wealth of material here that I'm having trouble sifting through it because today I gave a shiur on Nat Bar Nat in the case of a Dover Charif and a Machlokas between the Pre-Chadosh, the Machaber of Kivega, the Prima Gadim. So go easy on me. There's a wealth of material here. But as we go through it, I'm going to try to point out the cases of Shimshon HaGibor and Shlomo HaMelech. And again, I'm going to just keep talking and talking until I find it. And in those cases, Klal Yisrael were very much upset and impacted in the wrong way by leaders of Klal Yisrael who married women that they shouldn't have married. Wait, just one second. One second. No, it's coming back to me. Just one second. Wait, I had it and I lost it. Just give me one second. Oh, now I have it. I'm sorry. I made a mistake. Cross out the last couple of sentences. Not that Shimshon and Shlomo married Ktanos, but, and again, Rabbi, this is a very complicated sugya. This is called Hamizgayer L'shem Ishus. The question is, those non-Jewish women who underwent Gerus in order to marry, or, no, I shouldn't say in order to marry, but married Shimshon or Shlomo HaMelech, what were their motivations? And the halacha discourages a gerus with the wrong motivations. These ladies wanted to get married to Jewish men of great stature. They were not motivated by the right reasons, and therefore the halacha shuns that kind of gerus. But why did they marry them anyway? Because halachically, according to the strict law, although you're going to have trouble finding a Beis Din that's going to agree to enter into this gerus, if a Beis Din was convened and the gerus was, and the non-Jewish woman who wants to marry a Jewish man was subject to that gerus through a Beis Din, then halachically that gerus is valid. Again, we discourage it, but b'di'evet it's valid. If such a person, like Eshes Shlomo HaMelech, like the daughter of the king of Mitzrayim, if she would later on violate the Shabbos, for example, she has the status of a mumar, of a Yisrael mumar. Because although she was not motivated by genuine reasons to be misguided, nevertheless, halacha recognizes that gerus. And she can never rescind that gerus. In a similar kind of a way, but let's not equate them, says Rav Sternbach, Machlon and Kilion were guilty of convening a Beis Din and marrying these women in a way that Beis Din would not have encouraged gerus. And certainly not marriage based on such a gerus. Meaning that although technically, according to the strict letter of the law, they did not have relations with a non-Jewish woman, and that's certainly true in the case of Machlon and Rus, but nevertheless, they were guilty as Gedolei Yisrael of convening some sort of a Beis Din. Nobody knows exactly who sat on that Beis Din in Moab, and be Megayer them. Because this would not have won the approval and the excitement of any Beis Din that's worth its salt. We do not assume that a man could take a young girl who's not Jewish and just be Megayer her for the sake of marrying her and say, well, okay, Higdilu Yechalun Limchos, maybe she will make a Mecha, maybe she won't make a Mecha. Says the Bach, to put yourself into such a vulnerable situation and you want to rely and assume that this girl is going to accept upon herself Judaism when she becomes a Gdola, well, what about the other possibility? Higdila Yechola Limchos, in which case, says the Bach, the entire enterprise of Gerus's Batel is Nekra Meikara, and it turns out, my friend, that you have been living with a non-Jewish woman for all these years. That was the Avera that the Targum indicates in the first chapter of Rus that brought about their destruction and that harsh punishment in which they were cut down and their lives ended prematurely. And even though the Pasuk itself seems to indicate that they married Nachrios, the answer is Safek Nachrios. When the Pasuk says, according to Rav Sternbach's pshat, Vayisu lehem noshim moavios, which according to the Targum means the amim in nochrian, it means a suffix. True, as Tosus says, the gerus of Rus was a gerus of a ketana. Halachically, it's a valid gerus, but it's suspended in midair. We don't know down the line whether that gerus is in fact a gerus. It'll be misbarer hadover l'mafreya one way or the other. And one possible way is that they'll do a mecha, igloi milsim afreya, they were never Jewish. That's the guilt of Machlon and Kilion. And in fact, Machlon and Kilion did not live to see the day in which Arpa and Rus would stand at the crossroads and make their decision whether to be makabel ol mitzvahs or to be mocha. Their lives were cut down prematurely because, says the Targum, they had no right to enter into a relationship, a marriage relationship with a woman who's a safek giores, safek nachriah. And Rabosa, if we had time, this reminds me of a different sugya, also of a Sechta Ksubis, about Uri Achiti, who gave a get to Batsheva, Altnai, that if he doesn't return from the battle, the get is valid. But if he would return from the battle, the get is batel. And David had relations with Batsheva before we could know for sure whether the get would be valid or not valid. So you have a case of tnai, and you enter into a marriage relationship assuming one way or the other in the kiyuma tnai. That's a serious problem. And for that, there was a punishment, which, according to the language of Rav Sternbuch, is called avak nesue nachus. Avak nesue nachus. Meaning that, if you ask me, was Machla married to a nachus or not, the answer is no. But avak. He has a shmek. You know, we give a shmek tavik, an avak tavik. It's like avak lashon hara, you know, like where do I get a good meal? Oh, this guy's always cooking. There's always some good food in his house. I don't know what that means. Does that mean he's always doing the mitzvah achnasas archiv? Like Mrs. Machlis, may she rest in peace, who had 100 guests at every Shabbos table? Or does it mean, you know, they're always fressing away over there? That's where you get a good steak. You know, it's like the barbecues in Toronto, you know, in the middle of the freezing winter. Everyone's doing a barbecue. I mean, I never saw it anywhere in my life except by you guys. But the question, that's called Avak Loshon Hara. And here it's Avak Nesue Nachus. And if you take a look on page 5, again, we don't have time to go through this, but I just want to highlight a few things. You know, Joe is here in Eretz Yisrael, so I want to give him his money's worth there. If you take a look, he says the following. Maisa de Rus Sosum Tuva. The whole story about Rus is so confusing. It's so ambiguous. It's really clouded in a shadow of mystery. Vinevar b'yesus Hashem Yisroch Tzas b'inyin Gerus de Ger Katan. And he's going to rely on Tosis in Nazir, that when the Pasuk says in Rus, by Yisulem Noshim Mavios, or Arpa in Rus, then what the Pasuk means is, She Nasu Noshim Mavios Mashma Delonis Gairu, and they were Mavios Mamish, and to prove that the Gemara in Yevamos derives the halachas of Gerus from the dialogue that took place between Naomi and Rus later on, way after the death of Machlon, on the way back to Eretz Yisrael. Apparently she was not a Gioris, as the Pshuto Shemikra would indicate, Noshim Moavios. Omnom, on the next paragraph, Adover Tamua Vahafle Fela Shemachlon Vekilin Shnei Gdoli Adorayu Vehech Nosu Rachmana Litzlan Leisha Noshim Moavios Nokrios. Again, we're not talking about the issue that Boaz had to face about a Moavis entering into Kal Yisrael. The Rambam himself tells us that a Boel Kusis, a man who marries a non-Jewish woman, Ki'ilu Nischat Bol Avodah Zorah, it's a Shmek of Avodah Zorah, and she herself, the Neveles, Kusis, is Chayeves Misa, which would mean that according to strict halacha, if we take the Pshuto Shel Mikra and what's her name, Rus was a Nachria, then she's Chayeves Misa for having relations with Machlon, if we can only get her into a Jewish court of law. And then he says in the second column that the Gemara establishes that the reason why they died was Bishvil Midas Chasidus, that they left Eretz Yisrael B'Shas HaRov. They should have been more pious about it, more religious about it, and remained in Eretz Yisrael. He says that, okay, again, if you take a look, there's so much here, just trying to find the shortcut. One second. In the next paragraph that starts with the word umikodem, he points out that the gerus of Rus was a gerus aldas bezdin as a ktana, And then he says, a ger katan does not need kabbalas ol mitzvahs, but rather has the ability to be moche. The kaven shel eino chocha b'mesha eino moche tzricha kabbalah dafka. He says, in the case of Rus, we need an acceptance of gerus. It's not enough that she continue as she did when she was married as a katana to Machlon. She needs a formal kabbalas gerus. And why? Not David, for the reason that you mentioned before, that every ger katan needs a formal kabbalas gerus, but simply because her husband died, she had no husband, she had no connection to her mishpacha, she was now leaving her familiar surroundings, and therefore the absence of mecha doesn't prove a thing. We really don't know whether she's ready and eager to accept the mitzvahs. Is therefore tzricha kabbalah dafka, she needs a kabbalah. This is a gerus that is totally dependent upon kabbalah. Therefore all the laws of kabbalah, so mitzvahs we derive from Rus at this particular moment when she becomes a gedola. And therefore, if you ask me, did the Gedolei Adar violate the Iser of living with a non-Jewish woman, marrying a non-Jew? The answer is that they didn't violate that Iser because there was a Gerus. Mikol Makom, he says, Le Gedolei Adar Adar Pagam. This is very despicable. Shebe Eretz Nachria Safek in Yamdu Biadusam. Raising these girls as wives, right? When I say these girls, I mean Arpa and Rus, in the land of Moab, without any... I don't know if there was a Chabad house there in Moab. I don't know.
I imagine there was.
Yeah, probably there was. Yeah, I always say when you get to the moon, the first thing you'll find is a Chabad house. V'chein v'em is Sof, Basof Arpa. In fact, she rejected Judaism. L'chein heim nenshu, sheyotzu l'chutz laretz, exposing their wives to a very great suffix, whether they would remain Jewesses or not. The Kavan Shekidin Avdi B'Shaitan, since technically, according to the strict halach, what they did was Kidin, and they had a heter to marry a Gioret, each one a Gioret, therefore when Chazal want to pinpoint exactly why they were punished so harshly, they mentioned the fact that they had left Eretz Yisrael, and they weren't demonstrating the mid of Chassidus, and also with regard to their marriage to these women, that wasn't Chassidus. A Fruma Yid should not be married to a Gioris Ktana who's being raised in a foreign land and might very well be Mocha, and the Mocha undermines the Gerus Limafreya. Okay, Rabosai, I'm going to have to stop here. There's a heck of a lot more going on, and we only began the sugya, but I think we covered a great deal. I want to conclude with something that I found here in these pages, and that is that Rav Sternbach is not totally thrilled with his pshat, as we were, and for one reason only. He says that if you calculate the age of Rus when she married Machlon, because it was 11 years later that Rus left Eretz Moav on a way with Naomi to Eretz Canaan 11 years later after the marriage to Machlon, then if you're saying that Machlon married her when she was a Ketana and you're subtracting 11 years, then it means that Machlon married her when she was 2 years old. Yeah. And that's a little bit dochuk, because even if you'll tell me that at those days they used to marry young, I mean Rivka was only 3 when she married Yitzchak, but at least Chachi was 3. I don't know what legal status you would, or how description you would describe one of the Gedolei Yisrael marrying a woman who's 2 years old. I mean, I've heard of men marrying younger women, but this borders on...
Does the Megillah say when they were married, or does it say...
The Megillah says that 11 years after the marriage...
Does it say after the marriage, or does
yeah,
it say after...
Yeah, that's what he says. That's what he says here. Again, you have to go through Rus very carefully. He says here, Shabol estate Moav...
Yeah, that was
11. La'achar eser shonim. Okay, that's when Rus and Arpa apparently reached godless, because that's when the critical moment of Igdilichon Livros came about. He says, Yotze, it comes out that Rus Nisgaira Kshahoisa Bashna Tayim Bilvat. She married Machlon when she was 2 years old, having the Gerus. Her name was changed to Rus. And then, 11 years later, 10 years later, excuse me, she was with Nami on the way to Eretz Canaan when she accepted upon herself Gerus. And how does he know this? Because it says, Vayeshru Sham Ke'eser Shonim. The Pasuk says that they lived in Moab 10 years. So it must be that the maximum number of years from the wedding to Machlon until they were on their way to Eretz Yisrael was 10 years, because it says Vayeshvu Kasa Shanin. There were only 10 years. Now, if she was a Ketana when she married Machlon, she was only 2 years old. That he finds very difficult in his presentation. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here. And I wish everyone a meaningful fast. By the way, I was listening to the radio this morning. There's a station called Kol Chai. You familiar with it? So in any event, they had a whole presentation on the radio. I only was able to hear it for about 15-20 minutes in my trip from Har Nof to Katamon. And it was about Asar B'Teves. And frankly, I was really taken by it. You know, usually I hear these things and it's, you know, they read Sefer Todah, which I've read 50 times. It's coming out of my ears already. And I can tell you what happened on Asar B'Teves. It commemorates the day that the siege began on Yerushalayim. But he had a whole beautiful presentation about, you know, the tragedies that Klal Yisrael face. And throughout history, if you go through historical periods as he did, you'll see that there was always one particular event that took place before the tragedies, and nobody's nispoil from it, but that event really contains within it the seed of an entire period of destruction and subjugation and suffering for the Jew. I mean, one of the examples he gave in modern history was when Hitler came to power. And nothing really changed in Jewish life. Again, there were a couple of swastikas here, there, and elsewhere. You know, so we go on in life. I think it was in 1933, if I'm not mistaken. But that was really the beginning of the end. And the Jews denied it. Because we, like any human beings, have a tendency to be in denial. And that's what happened on Asar B'Teves. Okay, so they sieged around Yerushalayim. Nothing immediately changed. Life in Yerushalayim basically continued as was. But 2 years later, the Churban HaBayis took place. And Chazal say, you can trace back the Churban HaBayis to Asar B'Teves. And the message they want us to understand is that you got to be very careful about tragedies, and don't just, okay, it was an isolated incident. They were speaking a lot about the 8 boys who were killed in Merkaz Rav Kook. Yeah, and yeah, okay, so it was, you know, there was a terrorist attack, so the Palestinians succeeded, and Nebuch 8 Tzaddikim were taken from us. But what we have to realize is that in these events, there are warning signs, and we cannot live in denial. And that's the message of Asar B'Teves. Again, I'm giving you just the tip of the iceberg. It was just very, very meaningful for me. Okay then, Rabosai, thank you so much. And it's good to see you. And I hope to see you next Tuesday. Is there anything I should know about next Tuesday? It's a regular day. Okay then. All right, call to Shka. Thank you.
One more thing before you go.
Yeah, go ahead.
And that is, doing the whole Mice of Gairus for Rus, what Rus did as the format for Gairus, so to speak, right?
Right.
The question is, if somebody raises that the adopted child is not a Zeh, why don't they try to scourge in the same way Nami did Rus?
Because that's what, I mean, that's what basically happened, right? So the, I was going to say the answer, I think you said it already, and that is the reason why Naomi had to do that was because Ruth had no support systems in the Jewish community. Her husband's already dead.
Right.
Moving back anyway. There's no community. There's no anything. So now she could talk and choose either way. But
right. There's a real suffix if she'll remain Jewish. And Arpa did not remain Jewish.
Is much less likely to have
family is a critical element. Yeah. And that's why, you know, I have a friend that I learned Chavrusa with over Skype. He's in Gibraltar. He was brought out there to facilitate the gerus of an entire family and teach each member. He has private lessons with the father and then with the mother and then with each one of the children. They're all going to be misguided together when they get the okay. And that's an amazing support system. You know, when an individual member of a family, of a non-Jewish family, decides to be a ger, there's so many issues in their lives that come up about their relationship with their biological family. And it's a very sensitive business. And all the Rabbanim are grappling with this because, let's say, such a woman, such a Gioris, marries a Jewish man and she insists that she still wants to have a relationship with her family. And they're devout Christians. You know, this is a very big issue. Family is a tremendous support system, and the poskim are not necessarily excited about taking a child and being Megayer the child, but you know, the parents come, they never have a childless family, and we've seen over and over again how these parents who are never childless will have children, their own children, after going through this process of gerus. So I'm not telling you one way or the other. You know, I'm not advocating. You'll ask Rabbi Weber to see what his opinion on this is. But if the process is successful, if the family can create the parents can create a warm environment, send them to the right yeshivas, then there's more than a 50% chance, a better chance that they will remain devout members of the Jewish community. But they do have technically the right to be mocha. Should we now encourage them, hey, you know, throw it out, it's not worth it for you? I don't know. The Gemara says it's zachin liyodim shelo b'fanav, they haven't tasted the tam of Isur. Should we say to a 13-year-old boy who's really into it, you know, well, there's a tam of Isur out there, you know, you might want to get allured to it. Maybe we don't have to do that. Let's assume the child will continue in his ways, and that itself is a Kabbalah soul mitzvah. It's not a formal bekuvase Kabbalah mitzvah, but a tacit and assumed kuvase. The case of Rus and Arpo was a very, very unique case.
One more thing I want to ask. So you say, we say that back to the
point. Joe, am I holding you up?
No,
Joe, you know what, Dave? If you don't mind, let me just take a minute's break if you can hang in there, because I think Joe, you know, wants to.
So if we say that the cotton hasn't yet tasted Tom Isser,
right?
So then a non Jewish child, who's not even going to be just a regular non Jewish child, like millions of them, if they touch a bottle of wine, why is it? Is it treif? Because they haven't tasted Tom Isser. In other words, they haven't done a void Zaria, and the whole cheshesh is about pouring for a nisach.
The way I understood it, it's one of those Isurei Machol Shal Akum, like for example Gvinas Akum and Bishal Akum, and all these things apply to every Akum. We don't enter into the question of every, you know, let's say for example you had a guy who would, you know, seemingly is completely Mufka from Avodah Zarah. You know, he would declare, you know, in front of 50, you know, courts, that he has no interest in idols. They don't, you know, he's not a Buddhist, and he's not a, you know, it wouldn't make any difference. In other words, the way the Chazal said it, this is the way that they separated us from the Goyim. One of the ways is to make sure that the wine is only handled by Jews. Now, whether or not they have to be from Jews or not from Jews, that's a gigantic controversy. Lamaisa, most poskim are machmir about it. I personally don't think you have to be so machmir about it. I'm not going to go against the poskim, but the Isur of Maga Yayin is because of Chitun. It fits into that whole, you know, if we let them come into a house and cook for us and we're going to share food, it might lead to a social relationship. If we drink their milk and so forth, this is all Mishum Chitun. And if it's Mishum Chitun, then I don't see that there should be an Isur in the case of a non-Orthodox Jew. There's no Isur Chatnus with a non-Orthodox Jew. Obviously, you want to make sure he becomes frum before you marry him, but technically not. Okay, we got off a bit on a tangent. All right, Rabbosai, you're at the beginning of your fast. I'm wrapping it up. So I'm gonna have to say goodbye, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
All right, good. Thank you so much. Call to.